His only desire is to bless you and give you gifts. And sometimes if we're grasping hold of something we think we want and someone offers us something else, it seems like a burden. It seems like a punishment even, because we have preferred darkness to the light. We cannot see clearly. Have you heard about the insect surgeon? See, there is a problem that people who have normal pets, they can bring their pets to the veterinarian, but people are starting to keep more exotic or odd pets, and a lot of people have pet insects, and when they get sick, they have nowhere to take them because normal veterinarians don't care for insects. But a surgeon in Germany has become so good that he can actually perform quick surgeries on insects. Yeah, he even did one on the fly. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 208. If it's your first time joining us, we start every episode with the dad joke. I hope you enjoyed that. And please rate and review this podcast. Because it's your first time, it will help others to find this podcast. If you find it enjoyable, they might as well. And the highest compliment you can pay me in this podcast is to share it with your friends and family. The best way of doing that is word of mouth, but you can also do that online on social media, on our Instagram, especially at @manoffoodforthought, all spelled out. All of our social media handles and our content can be found on the website, manoffft.com. That's MANNAFFT.com. And while you're there, you can click on the subscribe button where you can sign up to get our psalm reflection mailed to you every Wednesday. And you can also click on the give button if you feel so inclined. You can become a financial sponsor and patron of this podcast for as little as $1 a month. And it helps pay for the costs and keep it on the air. And you get access to periodic exclusive content. And my thanks and my prayers, and you keep this podcast going. And so thank you so much for all of you who do that, all of you who keep coming back to listen. And if you're here for the first time, welcome. Let's get into our joy, junk, and Jesus. So every episode, I like to share some joyful things, some things I need prayers for, and some Jesus moments. I'd love for you to share those with us and or the people you're listening with, the people in your life. It's a great way to kind of check in with each other. And I'm recording right after Holy Week and Easter. And so happy Easter. He is risen. It is a blessed and wonderful season. We're in the octave of Easter right now. So we're still celebrating Easter Day today for 8 days, as if it is still that same Easter Sunday. So that is really incredible. So my joy, junk, and Jesus is basically all Holy Week and especially the Easter Vigil. The Easter Vigil is probably my biggest, you know, event and responsibility every year as part of my job. All of the liturgical formation and celebration preparations that go into that day are a lot. And so my joy, obviously, was seeing them all receive the sacraments at the Easter Vigil. And especially the next day on Easter, having that time to just go to Mass and then come home. And we had a great brunch with both of our parents and our son's godmother and her parents were in town. And so shout out to Justine and your parents. It was so great to have you over. It was just a really wonderful, relaxed day. My junk was that I was very tired because the Easter Vigil was the night before. I crashed on the couch yesterday after all of that, unintentionally slept for 3 hours, which threw off the whole rest of my sleep. So I'm still kind of recovering, but I like to say Easter Vigil, I am like a sweaty blur. Like I'm all over the place, constantly sweating because there's just so much to be running around doing, but it was full of just an abundance of grace. So my Jesus moment was obviously seeing all these people have these powerful experiences of the sacraments. And I heard from many people that this was the most powerful, the most beautiful Easter Vigil we've ever had, not just because of the numbers. There was just a spirit about the people who had been prepared. They were really excited and ready to receive all of these things. And so the really cool thing about the Easter Vigil this year is that we did something new in that at the end of Mass, all of the catechumens, candidates, confirmants, they had received all their sacraments. They were baptized. They'd been confirmed. They just received the Eucharist. And our pastor, Father Patrick, said, we call those the grand slam of the sacraments, but now we're going into extra innings. And I got to come up and invite everyone who wanted to, who had been prepared to do so, to be married in the church. So there's several couples in OCIA who had been married civilly, but not married in the church. And that is also a sacrament. So we wanted to give them all of the sacraments. So we'd never done that before. And a lot of people there didn't know we were doing that. So there was all this like this excitement and energy, and then all this emotion seeing them exchange their vows together and be married in the church was just such a gift, so beautiful, such an outpouring of grace. And a huge gift also was my team. We had a reception after that went until midnight, and my team just was amazing in just going into cleanup mode and getting everything organized. I mean, I didn't really have to ask anyone to do anything. Everyone just knew what to do because they've been involved, and it was just so wonderful. So I got home like 2 hours earlier than I normally would have on such a late night. So that was such a gift. So thank you to everyone involved in all of that. If you're listening, you are truly a blessing in my life. So that's what's been going on here and with me. Love to hear what's going on with you. But without further ado, let's get into the second reading for this upcoming Sunday, which is what we always look at on our podcast episodes that come out on Thursdays. And this upcoming Sunday is the second Sunday of Easter, also known as the Sunday of Divine Mercy. It was named so, I believe, by Pope John Paul II to commemorate a day in which we would celebrate the devotions that come from the visions that St. Faustina Kowalska, a Polish nun who became a canonized saint, had of Jesus when he revealed to her his messages of divine mercy for the world. And those writings in her diary recording those visions, some of her statements and the things she heard from Jesus got turned into the words that we use to pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy using rosary beads. And so if you've ever prayed that before, it's a really easy prayer, really easy devotion. And there are a lot of different pamphlets and booklets you can find on the explanation of what the chaplet is, its origins in those visions and St. Faustina. You may have seen the famous image where it says, "Jesus, I trust in you" at the bottom. And there's a picture of Jesus with red and white rays coming out of his heart, symbolizing the blood and water that poured out of his side and his mercy and his grace for the whole world. That also relates to some of the statements in the second reading, where you will hear phrases like water and blood toward the end. But this reading is from the first letter of St. John toward the end. And the first letter of St. John is kind of like a theological summary of the theological points and assertions of the Gospel of John. And so it's almost like a compendium of not the events of Jesus' life, but the theology and teaching behind this kind of message of love and mercy and Jesus being the light and that God being love incarnate and what all that means for us, kind of put forth in this letter. So we're going to read 1 John 5 verses 1 through 6. We're going to read it once through. This is the second reading for this upcoming Sunday. John writes, "Beloved, everyone who believes that Jesus is the Christ is begotten by God. And everyone who loves the Father loves also the one begotten by him. In this way we know that we love the children of God, when we love God and obey his commandments. For the love of God is this, that we keep his commandments. And his commandments are not burdensome. For which whoever is begotten by God conquers the world. And the victory that conquers the world is our faith. Who indeed is the victor over the world but the one who believes that Jesus is the Son of God? This is the one who came through water and blood, Jesus Christ, not by water alone, but by water and blood. The Spirit is the one that testifies, and the Spirit is truth." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Brothers and sisters, the Christian life is not comfortable or easy. Christian life is not meant to be comfortable or easy. The statement that really stands out to me in this is, his commandments are not burdensome. His commandments are not burdensome. Now, that may seem completely contradictory to what I just said. Burdensome means things aren't comfortable or easy. But the reason why the Christian life is not comfortable or easy is because we've treated the commandments like they are burdensome. And they are not. It's how we apply and interpret the commandments that can be burdensome, and living out the commandments in a world that is upside down because of sin. Jesus even had this criticism of the Pharisees and the scribes at his time in Matthew 23, verse 4. He says that they tie up heavy burdens that are hard to carry and lay them on people's shoulders, but they will not lift a finger to move them. He's talking about these traditions and laws that they have come up with, or extended the parameters of, to apply to everyone when they only applied to a certain group of people, like the priests. and they had made the law so burdensome for people that they couldn't possibly follow it. They had lost the heart of the law, which was to be in relationship with God and to avoid sin, and they started looking to the law itself as if you just follow those things and check these boxes, then you are in a right relationship with God, and we know that's not true. So the commandments are not burdensome. They're not meant to be burdensome. We are burdensome. The world is burdensome. Sin is burdensome. Because what sin does is it takes the good and distorts it and turns things upside down. You see, if there wasn't something appealing about sin, nobody would do it. And the devil is not creative. He cannot create like God does. All he can do is take what God has created, which is good, true, and beautiful, and he can twist it and make it less than it was intended to be. This is exactly what happens in Genesis chapter 3 in the Garden of Eden in verse 6 when the serpent is tempting Adam and Eve, which we'll talk about a little bit further momentarily. But when he's tempting them to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which they are forbidden to eat, Eve looks at the tree and it says, the woman saw that the tree was good for food, pleasing to the eyes, beautiful, and that the tree was desirable for gaining wisdom, true. It was good, it was beautiful, and it was true. And instead of appreciating it for what it was and the way in which God created it to exist, the devil tempts them to distort it and grasp it for their own purposes. And then it becomes burdensome. The commandments, the rules are not burdensome. In fact, they are freeing, they are liberating. But when we don't see it that way and we start to see things upside down as a result of temptation and sin, then we can take those good, true, and beautiful things and distort them, and then everything becomes upside down. This is what Jesus says to Nicodemus in John chapter 3, and he says, the light came into the world, but the people preferred darkness to light because their works were evil. For everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come toward the light, so that his works might not be exposed. See, the more and more we enter into sin, the more accustomed we become to it, to the point where we feel actually like that is illuminating us, that is allowing us to experience life as we want to, and the closer we get to the light, it's like going out of a dark room into the sunlight, having been in that room for a very long time. It's blinding, it's almost painful, and it's easier to stay in the dark room, and that's what happens as a result of sin. But Jesus says in John 8, I am the light of the world. He came to expose the works of darkness to the light, so that we might turn away. You see, when the law was given in the Torah to Moses, Moses recites it all just as God delivered it to him. All of these laws, 613 laws, as has often been calculated for the Jewish people, some of which were ritual laws about worship, some of which were religious laws about how they were to be different from the cultures and peoples around them, and some of them were moral laws that were inherently related to what was naturally good or evil. And many of those laws we no longer follow, we retain the moral law, but we no longer worship in a temple in a sacrificial manner because Jesus died once and for all, one sacrifice for all of our sins. And we no longer are culturally Jewish living 3,000 years ago, so we don't need to have the same regulations that they did to separate them from the pagan people surrounding them as they were learning how to follow the Lord. But even when they had all of those laws, at the end of Deuteronomy, toward the very end of the Torah, this is what Moses says. He says, for this command which I am giving you today is not too wondrous or remote for you. In fact, that may be God speaking there. But for this command which I am giving you today is not too wondrous or remote for you. Okay, so all of these laws, Moses recounts all of the laws to them as they are standing before, they are about to enter the promised land, wandering in the desert for 40 years, learning how to be in right relationship with God, failing over and over again, and then learning how to follow the law properly. They finally are at the edge of the promised land, about to go in, and Moses is reminding them of the law, reminding them of the things that God has done, and summarizing it this way. This command which I am giving you today is not too wondrous or remote for you. You are capable of doing this, is what he's saying. It's not too lofty. It's not too difficult. You are not too far from being able to follow these things because it's up to you and the Lord will respect your free will. He says a few verses later, he says, see, I have today set before you life and good, death and evil. If you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, which I am giving you today, loving the Lord your God, and walking in his ways, and keeping his commandments, statutes, and ordinances, you will live and grow numerous, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. If, however, your heart turns away and you do not obey, but are led astray and bow down to other gods and serve them, I tell you today that you will certainly perish. You will not have a long life on the land which you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess. So notice here that God is not saying, I will give you good things if you follow the law, and if you don't, I will punish you. He's saying, if you follow the law, you will grow numerous, and you will experience God's blessing because you'll be in relationship with him. But if you turn away, you will perish. It doesn't say God will make you perish or God will punish you. Your free will lead you onto the path of destruction, and God will respect it. You have the free will and the power to follow this law or to not. God says, I will help you if you ask, because he desires our good. Remember, in Romans 8, all things work for good for those who are called according to his purpose, for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. But God will also allow you and me to choose destruction. This is what relates back to the second reading we heard in the line that says, in this way we know that we love the children of God, when we love God and obey his commandments. This is not because we are forcibly being obedient. God is saying, if you want to be in relationship with me and receive the gift of life I created you to experience, then do not turn away from me, or you will obviously not experience those things. If we think the law or the rules are hard, it reveals how much we are drawn to see what the world or the enemy offers us as comfortable and easy and familiar because of our temptation and our sin. We are preferring darkness to light because darkness has become what we are more accustomed to, and the light is too painful to look at because it exposes the darkness, and we've become so accustomed to it. Because of the tension between the world and the truth, we will always struggle to shift our thinking, our desires, our attachments away from what we are used to toward something greater. And so, brothers and sisters, if you've fallen into this type of rules thinking, that mentality, ask yourself, what is really ruling you? Because if God is not reigning and ruling in your life, someone else is. And usually it's either yourself or the enemy. And you know, the easiest way the enemy begins to rule is by convincing you first to dethrone God in your life and take his seat for yourself. That's what he did in the Garden of Eden. I read that verse about the tree. The verses right before that tell us exactly this tactic of the enemy. Now, the snake was the most cunning of all the wild animals that the Lord God had made. He asked the woman, did God really say you shall not eat from any of the trees in the garden? Okay, so this is what planting the seed of doubt to take God from the throne in their hearts and dethrone him and take control, to take that seat for themselves. Because the serpent, the enemy, knows he cannot dethrone God. He's not greater than God, but he may be more manipulative and powerful than we are, and he may very well be able to dethrone us. So the woman answers the snake, and she says, we may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden. It is only about the fruit of the tree in the middle of the garden that God said, you shall not eat it or even touch it, or else you will die. But the snake said to the woman, you certainly will not die. God knows well that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like gods who know good and evil. You see the cunning tactic of the serpent here. And then that's when it says the woman looks at the tree and sees that it is good for food, pleasing to the eyes, and desirable for gaining wisdom. The temptation allows her to see what is good, to grasp at it and distort it for her own purposes. She dethrones God as being in control of her life, and instead of obeying him, takes that seat of control for herself. And Adam does the same. And it is far easier for the devil to dethrone us, or to control us in that seat of the throne, than the impossible task of trying to dethrone God himself. We have that free will where we have permission to do that. The devil cannot do that for us. And his game has not changed, brothers and sisters. The surest way to happiness is to entrust our lives to the one who made them. And the surest way to destruction is to grab hold of our lives for ourselves and believe the lie that we must know better than the all-knowing God of the universe. Brothers and sisters, his commandments are not burdensome. Sin is burdensome. We burden ourselves by trying to take hold of and control what God has already perfectly been in control of. And if you struggle with this, I encourage you to ask why. Why do I feel this rebellion? Where does it inevitably lead me? If I do take this control of my life and I abandon God, where will I end up? Why am I so attached to what is comfortable and easy? Where will my life be in 5, 10, 15, 25, 50 years if I keep this behavior up? We know that it is a path toward destruction. But the path that Jesus offers us is the path that he promises in John 10:10, where he says, "A thief comes only to steal and slaughter and destroy, like the serpent, to distort and allow us to go on our own purposes toward our self-destruction. But," Jesus says, "I came so that they might have life and have it more abundantly." God only gives gift. His only desire is to bless you and give you gifts. And sometimes if we're grasping hold of something we think we want and someone offers us something else, it seems like a burden. It seems like a punishment even. Because we have preferred darkness to the light, we cannot see clearly. But everything that God gives us is for our good. Everything that God gives is gift. And all that we have is what we do not deserve. All we have is from God. The only thing we can claim ownership of is our sin. And so everything that we have, apart from our sin, is a gift from God. And since it is all an undeserved gift, all we have is mercy. Mercy is God giving us what we do not deserve. And on this Sunday of Divine Mercy, we are reminded that even though we have free will to choose the path of destruction or the path of abundance, the path of death or the path of life, the path of evil or the path of good, God will aid us in that, and he will give us every gift that he can for our greatest possible good in the midst of that. And if our eyes are so focused toward darkness, sin, temptation, or evil, because we're trying to control our lives for ourselves, we may not see those things as gifts, but they are. And this Sunday of Divine Mercy is a call to convict each one of us, challenge each one of us to examine our lives and recognize that the reasons why we might rebel from God might actually be sources of life and abundance. They might actually be gifts. They might actually be things about him we do not fully understand. And instead of rebelling and turning away and going down a path of our own self-destruction, God is offering us a way out. The cross is our way out. But the cross is not easy. It is bloody. It required a bloody sacrifice. Why? Because the commandments and God are burdensome? No, because sin is burdensome, and it needed a burdensome response. But brothers and sisters, Jesus Christ paid that for you and for me. And so if I completely detach from the world, from sin, from temptation, the commandments will not be burdensome, brothers and sisters. The commandments will be effortless and easy. The persecution that will come will roll right off our shoulders. We will not even give it a second glance or a single moment of concern, because we will be properly oriented toward the light, and the light will expose darkness. So, brothers and sisters, if you've come too accustomed to the darkness in your life, do the work of breaking out of that room. And though the sunlight shining into your life might be painful and difficult at first, and there will be certainly growing pains as you seek to repent and turn away from sin, or begin that path of conversion or continue upon it, God is still merciful. He is still good. He is still abundant, and his commandments are not burdensome. So if you feel the burdens of life, know that those are the shackles and the slavery of sin at work in your life, distorting what is true, good, and beautiful, what God wants to offer you, and turning it into something lesser than that. And so if you've dethroned God in your heart, brothers and sisters, if you've taken that seat for yourself and allowed yourself to be in a position where the enemy can manipulate you and cause you to turn away from God, to turn toward sin, to turn toward darkness, now is the time to step out of that throne and allow the Lord to have his proper place in your life, so that all you will receive is his abundance and his mercy, his gift, endless gift. And those detachments will take time. They might be painful, they might be burdensome, but his commandments are not. relationship with him is not. We make it complicated. We make it a burden because of our sin. And so, brothers and sisters, let this Easter season be an invitation for you and me to turn away from sin, to receive the gift of what Jesus did for us on the cross, meeting the burden of sin with the burden of sacrifice and suffering, and to claim that over our lives so that we can be free and live as children of the light. That is all I have for you this week. God bless you, my brothers and sisters, and until next time, I will see you in the Eucharist. Happy Easter.